We're glad to have each one of you. I see some people already here. Frank, we're glad you're here today. And I'm sure there are others. We welcome those new families who identified themselves with us. We want to meet you after we're dismissed. I don't know where to meet all three of you. I'll meet you back at the back. If you want to come back there, we can have you stand there and introduce yourself, or we'll introduce you to other people. Today, I want to direct the lesson principally to the teenagers, our high school teens. This is about perhaps one of the only Sundays of the year whenever there's just us chickens here, us teenagers. Other times, there's either the regular school year or the majority of the local people. But today is, I'm going to use, if you don't mind, as a day when we can direct our thoughts toward the needs of these teens in particular. I want to read something that I think you'll find interesting. As I headed north, I came to the Prince's Wall, which was built to keep out the Bedouins and to crush the sand ramblers. I hid in a thicket in case the guard on the wall, who was on patrol at the time, would see me. I did not move out of it until evening. When daylight came and I had reached the Bitter Lake, I collapsed. I was parched with thirst. My throat was red hot. I said to myself, "This is the taste of death." But as I made another effort and pulled myself onto my feet, I heard the roaring of cattle and some Bedouins came into sight. Their leader, who had been in Egypt, recognized me, and he gave me some water and boiled some milk, and I went with him to his tribe. They were very kind to me. That is a statement, a personal account, by a man by the name of Sinuhe, who lived in Egypt 20 centuries before Christ was born. This is the account of his escape from Egypt into Canaan. Hebrews, the 11th chapter in verse 27, tells us of a similar event in the life of a man by the name of Moses, an Israelite. And he probably took the same course. And he probably, if the wall were still standing, had to be confronted and had to solve the problem of what to do with the guard on the wall, the prince's wall. Some of these were some of the problems that Moses faced as he also left Egypt and made his way to the land of Midian. But these were just some of the very few and perhaps insignificant details of the escape of Moses from Egypt. There were a lot of other things that had to do and that he had to face in his escape. A very revealing place is this place in life that we call the fork of the road. I think one of the most important forks in the road, young people, comes during your high school years. It did for me. And I think that it probably will, or perhaps already has, for you. But you're going to be facing, if you have not already, a fork in the road that will determine not only what you are, but it will determine what you're going to be in the future. And there's a great need today, young people, for teens who will be decisive, deliberate, and determined to do what's right. We need a whole generation of people, a whole generation of teenagers, to stand up and say, "We believe this is right." And we're going to do it if it means unpopularity, if it means being ostracized by our peers. We're going to do it because we believe it to be right. I want you to look at the decision of Moses for a few moments this morning. I think it will help you as you face this place in life that I call the fork in the road. I've asked them to sit down here on the front. That's why this is so cram-packed this morning, I guess, here. We can't reserve this place for you teenagers every week. But I'll tell you one thing. If you ever get to the place where you want to do something to really encourage the congregation and set it on fire and really encourage me, you'll see to it that every Sunday morning you're sitting down here on the front on three or four rows of seats. I don't know of anything you could do better than that. But let's look for a few moments at the decision of Moses and see what it meant. The decision of Moses was a very costly one. The stakes were high. It was not a decision that, you know, you could take or leave and that had no repercussions and no implications. This decision was one of those decisions that if you made the wrong choice, it meant everything wrong. If you made the right choice, it meant everything right. And Moses made this choice, and he made it with a keen eye. There was a negative side to this choice that Moses made. The writer of the Hebrews, or the Hebrew letter, says that Moses refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. And when it says that he refused, I don't know of a stronger word in the English language than to say that somebody refused. I refuse to do this. Moses simply said, I refuse. And when Moses said, I refuse to do it, this was a 100% full-fledged no. There wasn't an ounce of yes in it, young people. You know, it's awfully easy sometimes for us to say no, and yet without the definiteness that shuts doors, and without the definiteness that burns the bridges behind us, too often we leave ourselves a way of escape, or we leave ourselves a bridge open or a door open that we can get out of our no. It's so easy to say yes with reservation, to where our no and our yes becomes really just maybe. And this is especially true when it comes to the place and in life whenever there are societies or cultures that are clashing. Moses lived in a time when there was a clashing of cultures. There was an iconoclastic, bone-crunching clash of cultures when Moses lived. It was not one of those times when the decision really was not clear. It was not one of those times when, as I said a moment ago, that the decision really didn't make much difference. Moses stood at a time in life when the clashing of cultures was very prominent. The culture of the Egyptians was clashing with the culture of the Israelites. The culture of the ruling in class was clashing with the slave out and under class. And these two classes were what presented themselves to Moses. Shall I do with this class and go with them? Or shall I decide to go with this class and stay where I am? You're in the same position today. Do you know, I think we'll have to say that not every generation of teenagers is confronted with such a traumatic decision as the one that you're faced with today. I do not believe that the winds of change blow upon every generation of teenagers like it's blowing upon you today. I don't believe that the tide, the shifting tide of public opinion and how it has presented such a drastic change today, I don't believe that that kind of a tide beats upon you as teenagers in every generation. I think there are some generations that are born and they grow up and they go through their teenage years without really any real alternative. They've grown up like their mothers and fathers. They live like their mothers and fathers. They go on through life. They come into adulthood on the same coattail of their mothers and fathers. There's just not much really a change to be made or a choice to be made. But that's not true with you. This culture today, this generation of teenagers today, is, I think, more than any other generation in the last, I don't know how many hundreds of years. I'm not that associated with, I guess, history. But I think perhaps more than, you could say, more than almost any other generation of teenagers, you're being confronted with a decision, and the decision involves such stark realities and such stark changes. The culture of Christ is being challenged by the culture of the world. You're going to have to be called upon, or you are being called upon, and you're going to have to make a decision. It is not really just one decision. You're going to have to sort out several different avenues. You're going to have to sort between several different avenues of approach to life. You're going to have to sort out the materialism of a past generation. You're going to have to contrast that with what I would call an immaterialism of a new generation. An old generation that thought that things mattered all too much. A new generation with which it doesn't really matter at all. But an old generation that held on to some verities and to some sureties. They say these things are right and the other things are wrong. A new generation then has come up that says, well, not only do things not matter, nothing else of any other matters either. Nothing else matters. There are no such things as right and wrong. There is no such thing as morality or immorality. If you want to do it, do it. Do your own thing. It just really doesn't matter. If I had to contrast the two decisions that you're going to have to make in this respect, it would be this. You're going to have to decide between a materialism of a past generation and an immaterialism of a new generation. And yet it's not clearly defined, because there are some things about the new generation that are not right. There are some things about the old generation that are not right. And there are some things about both generations that are right. There's some things about both of them that are wrong. So you're forced to make this decision. And you need to make sure that you're able to make it and that you're qualified to make it with a wise choice. Moses faced just this very test. It was a test that simply said to Moses, you've got a decision to make, and it's one that's of stark reality. You can't really just glide over it without any real decision. The alternatives are very different. There was so much that had to be given up when Moses made his decision. He had to give up the highest social position in Egypt. He was the son of Pharaoh's daughter. And all that went with this, as far as the social recognition, had to be given up. But not only just that which went with being Pharaoh's son or the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He had to give up all of his friends. He gave up his peer group, the ones with whom he ran. Moses was a man just like you are. And he had people that he considered his friends just like you do. And he ran with those people who were the Egyptians. He didn't associate with the people of the Israelites. The people who were the Egyptians, the court attendants and their children, these were the friends of Moses. He ran with those people. And it was these people, and his peer group must have brought terrific pressure against Moses. And they must have said to him, Moses, what are you doing? You've lost your mind. You can't be friends to these people over here. You're a different class of people. You're not like them. Look at you. You're dressed in all this royal garb. Look at what you've been used to eating. That you don't eat like them. You don't dress like them. You don't live like them. You can't go with them. And yet he said, no, I'm going to do it. I can't stay here. He gave up and said no to the highest political position. What will people not do for political power? The water gates of history, if they could be listed, would shock every one of us. Moses said no, not to the water gates. Moses said no to the legitimate accession to a throne. He had it coming to him. He was the son of Pharaoh's daughter. And he could have just bided his time until the time came that he could say, well, now it's my time. And when Pharaoh died, more than likely Moses would have been the next in line, or else the next, to being in the throne or upon the throne of Egypt. But he said, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to take that. But he said no also to the pleasures of Egypt. The Bible says in Hebrews, the 11th chapter, that Moses decided to suffer ill treatment with the people of God rather than enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. Egypt was the London or the New York of the ancient world. And all the pleasures of Egypt that you could imagine, from the most refined down to the most vulgar, were his for his asking. And he could have had any of them just with the snap of his finger. And yet he said, no, I'm not going to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. I would rather suffer ill treatment with the people of God. Fourthly, this man said no to all the treasures of Egypt, the money. And what men have not done for money has not been thought of. But Moses said no. He says in Hebrews, the 11th chapter, about verse 28, he says that he accounted the reproach suffered for the Christ to be greater wealth than all the treasures of Egypt. Well, that boy made some real choices, didn't he? And the things that he gave up when he made this choice were of real value to a lot of people. But Moses also gave up this thing of being, or what you would call, one of the most important things for a man of 40 years old, and that's how old he was when he made this choice finally. But that was simply the position of being at ease. He gave up the security of life that the throne of Egypt and that the ruling power in Egypt afforded him and provided for him. And when a man is 40 years old, this thing of security means a lot. It doesn't mean all that much to you young people, but when you get older, it'll mean a lot to you. But he had to do something else. He had to disappoint his foster mother. She was a heathen, that's true, but she was also a woman. And she was a woman who had a mother's heart. It was she who had rescued Moses from the River Nile. And it was she who, when the basket was opened up and this little tyke cried, well, her mother's heart just reached out and just wrapped around him. She couldn't stand it. He captivated her. He was a beautiful child. And when he cried, it says in the scriptures that she took him and took him for her own child and had him raised and then brought him into the palace. These are some of the things that confronted Moses. Moses, are you going to give up all this political power? Are you going to give up this social position? Are you going to give up all the pleasures of Egypt and all the treasures of Egypt? Are you going to give up this security? Do you mean to tell me you're going to bring disappointment to you, to this woman who's given all her life to you and brought you up as her own son? Now, young people, I don't think that all these things tempted Moses. But let's not be foolish enough to think that none of these things tempted him. Some of these things got to Moses. There are people who like money. That would have gotten to him. There are people who like prestige, social prestige. There are people who like political prestige, power. There are people who just cannot stand to hurt someone. There are all these different things. And I don't know what Moses' makeup was. But I do know this, that Moses was probably tempted by one or more of these things. I want you to meet him, and I want you to consider this man who said no to some things, and the things to which he said no were the very things that he had known for the last 30 years, and really, they were the only things he had known for the last 30 years of his life. But he made a decision, and he stood by it to the point that it cost him all these things that were so near and dear to his life. But that's not all that's involved. The choice that Moses made involved saying yes to some things. It says, choosing rather to share ill treatment with the people of God. He refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to do something else. And you know, that's what most real decisions involve. They don't involve just saying no to something. They involve saying yes to something. Neutrality is not morality, young people. You can't straddle a fence and expect to be recognized as being a moral individual. And a lot of us try to straddle fences. In fact, that's one of the best, I guess, most often engaged in activity as a teenager. And that's this thing of fence straddling. You know, you don't want to hurt this person, and you don't want to hurt them. So you just kind of play both sides of the thing. You just straddle a fence. You do like most politicians. But it's a touchy job straddling a barbed wire fence and trying to keep both ears to the ground at the same time. That's what Moses refused to do. Moses said, no, I'm not going to live like this, but I'm going to live like this. Doing right is only halfway done when you refuse to do wrong. Remember that. And you're going to be called upon to refuse to do wrong. Well, that's good. But no amount of just don'ts added up equal a Christian or equal a saint. It takes saying no to some things, but it also takes saying yes to some things. The mannequin, you know, in a store that looks so real. You can go in there and you can tempt him to go off and get drunk with you. Someone could. You wouldn't tempt him to do that. But someone could come in and say, why don't you go and let's get bashed or let's go get stoned. Boy, he'd just reply, you know, with a cold, dead silence that would let the person know, ooh, he's not willing to do that. But somebody else might come up and say, why don't you go to prayer meeting with me tonight? And he'd give him the same response, just a cold, sullen, silent no. Because he just doesn't, of course, he's inanimate. People are not neutral. People are not neuter. Things are neuter, but people should never be neuter. People should never be neutral. And in your decisions, let it be such like Moses that he said no, that it was a 100% full-fledged no, but it also contained this thing of a 100% full-fledged yes. It was a resignation from some things, but it was a total commitment to some other things. What was it that Moses said yes to? Well, he said yes to suffering the ill treatment with the people of God. And you don't know what it meant by that, because suffering with people of God today is not suffering. Casting your lot with the people of God today perhaps is not really suffering at all, especially in a situation like we live in today. And yet you may find yourselves having to cast your lot with a certain group of people in the midst of a whole larger group of people who claim to be the sons of God, and they're not really living like they ought to live. You may find yourself having to stand up by yourself and to suffer not with the people around you who are the children of God, but to suffer with Moses and Elijah and Joshua and those great men of the past who, because of their faith, stood up and were alone in their decision. You may have to be a Daniel. You may have to stand alone. You may have to stand alone in the academy. It may be that very well that you as a young lady will have to stand up and by yourself say, I don't believe this is right. I don't believe this is modest. And I don't care what the rest of you are going to do. I'm going to do what I believe is right. I don't care if you ostracize me. I don't care if you laugh at me. I don't care if you disfellowship me and won't have anything to do with me and make me a social outcast. I just don't care. I'm going to have to do this because I believe it's right. My wife, in teaching the teenage girls, told them the other day, I'm still looking for a girl who will stand up and do what's right because of the fact that it is right, and to stand up for modesty. And maybe nobody else will. She said, you be that girl that will stand up in the face of all the others who won't. You stand up and say, I'm going to do this because it's right and because it's modest and because it's decent. And you may have to be that very person. Can you do it? He gave up a lot of things. He had to decide that he would do certain things. He would share ill treatment with the people of God. But this also meant death upon arrest. It says back in Exodus, the second chapter in verse 15, that Moses was there sought by the king. The king tried to kill him. There was an APB sent out all over the whole of the valley there, of the Egyptian valley, the Nile Valley. This APB, this All Points Bulletin, gave Moses description and where he lived and what kind of clothes he was last seen wearing, what was the nature of his chariot, how many horses and what color probably, that sort of a thing. When the king sends out an APB, by the way, he has all the facilities at his disposal. There was no way that Moses could normally have escaped, but he escaped anyway. I don't know how he did it. The Bible doesn't say how he did it. But Moses chose death in this choice. It meant saying yes to the possibility of death. Well, you say perhaps Moses didn't know what all he was choosing. I don't doubt but what that's true. Do we ever know the implications and the ramifications of what we decide? You can't ever see all of the things that are connected with your decision, can you? No. I don't doubt but what Moses could not see the hand of God in the things that he was doing. I don't doubt but what he was unaware of how closely connected God was with him in this decision that he made. I don't think that he understood the rejection of his own people. In fact, it says in the book of Acts, Stephen says that Moses thought they would understand that God was delivering them by his hand, but he said they didn't understand. And then when Moses committed his lot with them, whenever he went out and smote this Egyptian, the people he thought would have understood. But the next day he tried to solve a dispute between two of his own brethren, Hebrew brethren, and one of them said to him, "Why don't you leave us alone? Who made you to be a ruler or a judge over us? You're going to kill me like you killed the Egyptian yesterday?" And Moses got in trouble, and I think not so much because some Egyptian saw him kill this Egyptian. I think he got in trouble because his own people didn't understand what he was doing, and he had to flee and wander for 40 years in the wilderness because the people who should have understood didn't understand. And I don't know whether he understood why they didn't understand. And whenever you stand up for what's right, young people, you may not understand why the people around you, who ought to be those who receive you and accept you and who ought to hold up your hands and encourage you for doing right, you may not understand why they'll laugh at you. I don't think Moses understood. I don't think Moses understood why God was so silent for 40 years. After Moses made his commitment, after he got out on the limb, and after the Israelite people sawed the limb off out from under him. I don't know whether Moses understood why God didn't come to him right then and say, "Now, Moses, it's all right. This is all in the plan." As far as we know, it was 40 years later before God ever said, "All right, Moses, you're the one." And young people, let me tell you something. There may be dark days ahead of your decision to do right. You may decide, "I'm going to do right. I can't do anything else." There may be dark days when no one encourages you, when you see no real sign, if you want to call it a sign from God, that he is approving of you and that you are doing what you ought to do. There may be days of struggle when you would say, "Well, I wonder if I did the right thing." And yet all of this was involved. Moses was paying the price for doing right so that he might enjoy the prize for doing right. And you may have to do the same thing. And you may have to suffer the same times of indecision and the same times of wondering. But don't wonder. If you do right, you know you've done right. Well, all of these things Moses had to say yes to. I wonder how in the world he did it. How could a man brought up in a king's palace make a decision to become identified with a slave people, having to give up the political and the social and the comforts, the political and social advantages, the comforts? How could he give up all those things and say yes to possible death? And if he didn't get killed, he'd have to suffer as a slave person or with the leader of a bunch of freed slaves for the rest of his life. How on earth could he make that decision? I'll tell you one and only one way that he did it. He believed he was doing what was right. He believed it was right. And Moses had a very keen sense of what was right. Oh, listen, it's so easy, young people, to think that what we want, or to persuade ourselves that what we want is really what we ought to do. We're so gifted at deceiving ourselves that if you're not careful, you'll deceive yourself invariably into the position of believing that what you want to do is really what you ought to do. And boy, you just go down through life having deceived yourself and having made so that you know that you, "Well, this is what I ought to do." And oh, how we rationalize to bring ourselves into a position where we can live with ourselves. Moses could have turned his face against those people who were suffering. He could have just winked at it, or he could have just not gone by where the slaves were working. He could have just simply turned his face around and not looked at those people.
He could have thought about Joseph. You know, he could have said, well, now, I just must stay in the government. Joseph was a man who stayed in the government. He was a man who stuck in there with it, and he came to be a great blessing to the people because he became one of the rulers of the Egyptian people. He said, that's what I'm going to do. He could have said that, but he didn't, because his moral values, his sense of morality, wouldn't allow him to. But not only that, Moses knew it was right, but second, Moses had a very keen eye for what was lasting and real. How easy it is, young people, to satisfy ourselves with what's popular and immediate and to not be really striving for what's real and ultimate and permanent. You're confronted with a whole gamut of things that are not real. They're passing. They're transitory. You're being fed from all the TV and from all the news media and from everything else. You're being fed with a whole gorged diet of things that are no more permanent than the mist in the morning. And whether that, and I won't get into details about what it is, I think you know what I mean. You're being fed music, you're being fed art, you're being fed things that are not permanent. They're transitory. And you need to be able to sort out. Moses had this keen sense of being able to decide what was lasting and what was not lasting, what was real and what was imaginary, and what was transitory and what was permanent. Moses had a keen sense. His sense of values was well developed. Well, how in the world did he do it? He did it because he thought it was right. He had a keen sense of knowing that which was real and that which was imaginary, that which was permanent and what was temporary. And the Bible says that Moses did it by faith. He endured as seeing him who is invisible. He did it by faith. One question. Where did he get this faith? He got it from the same place he got his sense of values. He got it from the same place that he got his sense of morality. Young people, Moses got his faith and his sense of values and his sense of morality from his mother and father. That's right. His mother, before Moses was weaned, instilled in him these senses of value and the sense of morality and this faith in God. His mother and father did it. Young people, let me say something to you. Don't fail your young people. Don't fail your children. You're standing today at a crossroads and you're making decisions, but they not only affect you, they affect your children. And the time will come when you'll see, as you look at your children as they're growing up, you're going to think back in your own teenage years. You're going to see, you know, that choice that I made way back there is affecting my children. It has mine. I can think right now to a street in Tuscumbia, Alabama, to a location on that street where I was standing the moment I made a decision that I was going to preach the gospel. I can call my mind back to that one location on that particular day, and I know that one decision has affected the lives of my own children. I was standing at a crossroads in life, and I made a choice, and it determined not only what I would be, it determined what my own children would be, and you do the same thing. Moses did it by faith, but he got this faith from his mother and father. Did Moses make the right choice or not? Oh, yes, he made the right choice. I wonder if you ever had any times of questioning. I wonder if you had any second thoughts. I imagine he did. Whenever he took his stand with his people and they saw the limb off him out from under him, I guess he thought, whoa, me, what in the world happened? During those 40 years, I don't doubt but what he had many misgivings and wonderings about what he had done. During the time when he led those smelly Jews out of Egypt and brought them in through a land for 40 years, those slaves, and as they mumbled and quarreled and grumbled and they were all involved in sin, don't you know you must have thought, well, what in the world have I done? And on occasions he let that frustration be known. And then the day, I guess, that God said to him, Moses, you're not going to be able to go into the land of Canaan. I wonder what he thought. I wonder if he had any second thoughts. I wonder if he thought, well, maybe I didn't make the right choice. By that time, as disappointed as he must have been, I don't think that Moses had any doubt about what he had done right. And then when you read over in the Gospels where when Jesus was on the Mount of Transfiguration
And there appeared with him Moses and Elijah, talking to him about the coming of the kingdom. All you can say is that Moses must have thought, as he looked back on that day when he said, "No, I am not going to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. I'd rather suffer ill treatment with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season." I know Moses must have thought, "You know, that was the best day's work I ever did." Someday in your life, you're going to be able to look back through your years and look back to your teenage days. I hope and pray that you're the kind of person who, like Moses, with a keen eye to what's real and what's lasting, with a keen sense of what's right and what's wrong, and with a keen desire to do what's right at the cost of all other things, I hope you'll be able to look back on your teenage years and point to a day or an hour or some event in your life where you, like Moses, refused to do what was popular, perhaps, or what was the in thing, and you stood up and said, "No, I'm going to refuse to do that, and it's a 100% full-fledged no, and I'm going to choose to follow God. I don't care what the cost may be." I hope you can look back, and if the time comes that you can, you'll say, perhaps like Moses, "That was the best day's work I ever did. Moses made the right choice." You're here today and you have that same opportunity. I don't know whether it'll be today or not, probably won't. It'll probably come on a Monday or a Tuesday or some other day of the week, as was mentioned in the prayer. Today may not be the day that you'll make that decision. But when the time comes that you stand at the fork of the road, let your eye be upon God, and as seeing Him who is invisible, make your choice decidedly, decisively, and then stand there and walk with God and let your choice be made known. Consider the choice that Moses made as he stood at the fork of the road, and let it be an example to you as you also stand there. If you're here today and this choice is being presented to you as a person, if you're not a Christian, well, the choice, of course, is yours. You're standing at the fork of the road. You can't always stand there. You're going to have to pass on one day. And to refuse to choose is, in essence, a choice. Have you made your choice for God? If you haven't, you're a bit very foolish. You need to make your mind up and take your stand. Let me urge you to let these young people who have become Christians, let them be your example. Stand up now where you are and come forward, confessing your faith in Christ and being baptized into Him upon your repentance. Take your stand with the Lord. Be raised to walk a new life. Whatever may be your need, let today be your day of decision as Moses. And will you come as seeing Him who is invisible, as He beckons you to come now while we stand and sing.
Come, while we are praying.